We're seeing if we can practice whether we're sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. And in terms of what might be called our formal practice, we're at ease when we're standing as much as when we're sitting. We're at ease when we're sitting as much as when we're lying down. But you can feel that we're not quite at ease, right? In one posture or another. Could you sense that? Yeah. I had a friend who, his practice in Thailand was to stand every day for 3 hours under a tree. He said sometimes people would come in and stand with him. But that was his practice. As far as I remember, he chose to do it around noontime, which is really hot in Thailand at noontime, you know, for 3 hours. But he loved it. It was something that began to pick up steam in a really positive way and really informed the rest of his day. So I wanted to give you a little taste of that because we can over-focus on the sitting. As essential as the posture of sitting is, not everybody is suited for it. I have one student at home who mostly has lied down for her whole entire practice because of the body being the way that it is. And the understanding is so deep, and the liberation that has come about through lying down the whole entire time is pretty remarkable, pretty extraordinary. So we use these different forms of sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. And as I said, evening out the postures means that we are able to practice in whatever form that we're in. I wanted to read you again what I had just read you, and I'm thinking as I'm talking that it's so connected. I talked about this neurotransmitter called anandamide, and it actually comes from the word ananda. And as most of you know, Ananda was the Buddha's attendant. And the story of Ananda is that when the Buddha died, he was called upon to participate in this big gathering of trying to, for everybody, all the monks, to recollect what the Buddha had said in his lifetime so that it could all be written down, and here we are today, you know, the recipients of what was said. And the story of Ananda is that he was a really, really dedicated practitioner, but he didn't know the deepest freedom either, the deepest happiness. And the story is that he decided he better step it up, you know, because he was going to have to go to this gathering and reveal what he knew. And so he practiced in a formal way, sitting, walking. They don't talk about the standing, but perhaps he stood as well. And that he decided he needed a bit of a rest, and so he was sitting up, and just before his head hit the pillow, he knew how things were. The heart was liberated. There's a beautiful poem by a Theravada nun the Theragati? Yeah, it's a wonderful book of nuns' songs, and I wish I had it with you because it's just on my mind right now and I can't recreate it. But it's something like, as the wick went out, her mind was free. So it's just interesting, this neurotransmitter that scientists discovered called anandamide. I learned how to pronounce the word this morning. Rodney and I went on the computer. But this word that we're used to in our tradition, ananda, yeah. So ananda, the word, is a Sanskrit word, and it means joy, bliss, or happiness. And it's called the bliss molecule. That's what it's called, is the bliss molecule. So I just wanted to to redo this again. And my point with the Ananda story was that sitting, walking, standing, and lying down end every time in between. The transitions as well. So that was the point of that. So to offer this to you again. Okay. We don't practice for the purpose of attempting to fix ourselves, and the practice does not have to do with self-improvement or becoming perfect. Inner freedom is far different and much more relaxing than perfection. We are engaged in training the mind as a way to access intrinsic peacefulness and a constantly available current of joy. I don't see joy as the opposite of grief, but as the current that runs underneath all of life. The question is how to access and swim in this current. The Buddha taught that it is necessary for people to have a basic level of security in their lives, and that this security is a foundation for meditation. For those of us who live in relative ease, it behooves us to remember that improving worldly conditions for others is a powerful way of alleviating suffering, as well as paving the way for all who want to partake in Dharma nourishment to be able to do so. There are many scientific studies that point to the beneficial effects of a dedicated meditation practice. I'm sure that you're aware of some of these as well. There's one really odd one around, there was a study done around the results of the study were that people basically enjoyed giving themselves electric shocks rather than being with themselves and being with their own thoughts for 10 or 15 minutes. They would rather give themselves electric shocks. So already, you know, we're beyond that. Already we're willing to sit with ourselves. Things are good, you know, things are good. But there are these, that's a really good one, but there are these different scientific studies, and I'm not all that scientifically minded, and I always feel like, I don't know. For some people, being able to prove these things is important, and it gives people more trust and more faith. And if you just practice, you'll come to trust and faith yourself. But anyway, this was one study that I particularly liked. It's called the feel-good gene. So recently, scientists have found that because of a genetic variation in the brain, some people are naturally less anxious. Yeah, are naturally less anxious and thus happier than other people are. Those who have this particular genetic variation find it easier to let go of past painful experiences. This genetic mutation produces higher level of endamide in the brain, which is a neurotransmitter that produces a sense of well-being. About 20% of the population is born with that particular genetic makeup. That's really small, 20%, yeah. We either have it or we don't. I was not born with this gene, and yet the anxiety I began life with has completely eased. It is clear to me that the practice of meditation has made up for the absence of this genetic predisposition. I have observed this same shift in countless practitioners, the easing of anxiety and an increase in well-being. I have come to the conclusion that if we practice with diligence and perseverance, it does not matter whether we were born with a feel-good gene or not. Knowing this inner sense of well-being is one of the imperatives of training our minds. So sometimes we don't always take in, I think, the understanding that we need for there to be enough happiness to be able to look into the depths of our unhappiness. We need for there to be enough steadiness to be able to look into inner chaos. we need there to be enough sense of balance and tranquility to be able to look into restlessness and emotional pain. And so in our formal sitting, of sitting, walking, standing, and lying down, encouraging a sense of well-being is really quite to the point. Yeah. Not to try to skip that step, but when we're sitting, if any sense of well-being arises naturally, it's a really good thing. Yeah? It's a positive thing. And can we simply at times enjoy breathing? Yeah? It's very important because it offers us an initial level of what you could call independence or self-reliance, where we're not as externally oriented. We're not trying to get so much from the environment or from objects or from other people. And this is how most of us, you know, kind of begin in this life, where we think that we have to get this or that. We have to attain this or that. That everything is outside of us. And so our life is spent on some level scrambling to get what we can out of our relationships, out of the objects in our lives, out of our work. And this is not to undermine any of those things. It's good to have good work. It's good to be in a relationship if you go in that direction that is beneficial and supportive. It's good to have good living conditions, so not to undermine any of these things. But the kind of sense of well-being that comes about through our formal meditation practice, sitting basically, walking, standing, and lying down, this offers us a glimpse into the recognition that we have it within us, that we can depend on our own inner resources. And so immediately we're less hungry. Immediately when we glimpse this, there's more of a sense of contentment, and we also know where to look. So we're not looking where lasting happiness cannot be found. And of course, anxiety is going to ease. So I wanted to impress this upon us, because it's where the formal practice comes in. I spoke yesterday about the three different aspects having to come together: hearing the teachings, which includes studying the teachings, the sitting practice, the formal practice of sitting, and seeing if we can be awake and aware in our everyday life, whatever it is that we're doing. This is where the sitting comes in. You know? This is where the formal practice of sitting and walking and standing and lying down come in, is this sense of initial level of well-being. It's not enough. We go further than that. But we do want to encourage within ourselves this sense of contentment and well-being, and being able to have a kind of initial sense of refuge. You know, when we're with the breathing and we can be with the breath as a refuge, it's not an ultimate refuge, but it's a darn good one too. You know, it's a temporary refuge, but it encourages this sense of inner joy and well-being to come about. And then we have a firm foundation, or we have a springboard into a deeper level of inquiry and investigation. But we have this sense of well-being assisting us and filling us up and holding us as we venture into more daunting territory. So, I think I'll end with that for now. Let's have a sitting, if you can come into a steady posture, a stable posture, an upright posture. basically is picking up the method that is best for you, the breath, the whole body just sitting, sound, metta. Whatever your method, keep it very clear, very simple. Just this, just this. Encouraging impeccable present moment attentiveness and releasing preoccupation, ruminating, adding a thought to the thought that's happening now. Continuing with your method, but contemplating adopting the attitude of what's called don't know mind. One Zen master called don't know mind. Don't know mind is most intimate. Don't know mind, a term used in some Korean Buddhist traditions, is a practice as well as a realization. We practice remembering that we don't know and can't know what will happen in any moment beyond this one. And we practice being open to unexpected experiences instead of living in our thoughts, assumptions, and descriptions. Describing our lives to ourselves and constantly commenting is very different from actually living life or letting life live itself. At the same time, don't know mind is a realization. We live don't know mind from moment to moment and express open-heartedness in all of our activities, in relinquishing the need we have to know what will happen in life before it happens. We open to joy. Everything we experience with awareness becomes new. Don't know mind is another word for joy, and joy is another word for wonder. Wonder is a sensing of the sacred and is not dependent on conditions and circumstances. Joy is a natural consequence of releasing and recognizing that conditions are largely out of our control. We practice reserving our judgments, willing to see in new ways. Don't know mind is a mind that is spacious rather than narrow and confined. In this spaciousness is a tangible sense of gentleness. The willingness to inquire with a silent mind provides access to a life of wonder. Just before the Zen teacher Jogo Beg died, she reportedly said, "This too is wonder. This too is wonder." these remaining minutes in this sitting, continuing to practice with whatever method is best for you, and infusing this moment with wonder, not knowing, knowing that we don't know. And so releasing into life as it is here and now. This moment matters. If you remember the fifth of the recollections, this moment matters. It's not better than, it's not worse than. It's simply life expressing itself in a variety of forms. Can we approach this moment with open-hearted, compassionate, kind attentiveness? Aware of the content, but not stuck on the content. Aware of spaciousness, that which is holding what is. Not to make a problem, an enemy out of thinking. And to release thinking into this greater expansiveness, this greater field of awareness. This was said by Nisargadatta Maharaj. He says, all happiness comes from awareness. The more we are conscious, the deeper the joy. Acceptance of pain, non-resistance, courage, and endurance. These open deep and perennial sources of real joy, true bliss. May all beings have ease of well-being. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings live in loving kindness and in joy. Please feel free to take a little conscious break, use the bathroom or jump around a little bit, and we'll talk together when everybody's back here. Just 5 minutes, that kind of thing.